Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Ask Tall Paul Radio Show. This is Tall Paul coming to you live from San Marcos, California, with my good friend Joey D'Elia, the guru here on our episode.
Whoa.
Come on, Joey.
All right, well.
Anyway.
I'll do my best.
Today we have an interesting topic. We've heard about the word sustainability, but we also, there's a term called permanence, and Joey picked this topic, so he's going to talk and talk and talk tonight and tell us his thoughts on the topic. So, Joey, what's going on?
So the topic tonight, why I thought about that and I wanted to talk about it is it's something that's really been captivating a lot of my attention. As we've been progressing with Tipawana Farm here, we have people living here now. Paul's living here, like we've said before in our show, and there's other people living here. I want to think about, okay, so I'm designing, you know, using permaculture design techniques to make this farm to be permanent, like. And what does that mean for me when you look at permanence, that state of being permanent? And if we're going to make this Tipawana Farm like permanent, and well, if it's going to be permanent and it's going to have to do with humans, then that has to do with food. And something I've been looking more and more into, because you just even being surrounded by the food that we do have here right now, there's a big thing to think about. And that big thing is the food, but it's what food? And it's what kind of systems will support humans permanently in one location. Now, what I'm thinking about is talking about what systems do. The veggie garden doesn't support humans permanently because you would die if you only ate veggies, just veggies, because there's not a lot of calories in vegetables. There's a lot of minerals.
And they don't grow year-round. Now, you could store, but, you know, it could be very difficult to rely solely on vegetables.
But it'd be really difficult because you'd have to consume so much, you'd wear out just trying to chew it all.
Yeah, not only consume, but they require more effort than other types of systems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we start thinking about those systems and which ones in putting in place will give you a continual outcome and develop to be even more permanent. I mean, the first thing we look at is the tree systems. I mean, if you're looking at this long-term, ongoing, permanent type of perennial, calorific, like super dense calorie, like foods with a lot of calories in it, you're looking at fruit, you know, high sugar. So when you start looking in a permanent, I'm going to do permaculture design, and I want to have a farm, or I want to have a place because I want to grow all my own food. Even if it's not a farm, I mean, it would be a farm by function in a way, because you're, you know, going to grow your food and have those kinds of life-sustaining systems on it. But you're going to say, I'm going to move and I'm going to buy a piece of land or enough land for me to grow all my own food on it. Okay, what does that mean? Well, one, ideally that means tree systems. You're going to put in some food forest systems and you're going to plant a lot of them, a lot of fruit trees, to give you a harvest throughout the year. And as the trees mature, you get more from them and more. See, actually, that kind of strategy.
Well, not just fruit, also nuts. Nuts are very high in calories, and they grow on trees. So we could say fruits and nuts.
You could say fruits and nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely nuts are that great survival food staple in your diet where you can store those nuts for a long time. And if you don't have a good fruit production, then you can rely on those nuts to keep you alive because there's so many calories in nuts. That will give you definite permanence.
And there's also high yield. These nut trees get enormously huge, and they produce a lot of food.
And the nut trees will live longer than you.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about a permanent situation, a permanent system that you can leave to your children or to somebody else, or even if you were going to sell it one day.
And also, some of these nuts are very drought tolerant, like the pecan. They can live in the desert, and you know they don't require a lot of water. So, like where we live, that's a very good consideration, I would think too.
And you start strategizing where, like Paul said, the nuts and how they store so well, and you can get such a high yield from them. You also have things to consider: figs, which are like a staple for a lot of cultures. That you can simply dry out very easily, and you've condensed those calories into these little yummy little sugar packets full of minerals and vitamins, and you can store those for a long time. Some of those trees that you can easily store the fruit from is a real, real important thing to think about. And I think we have, and as you sophisticate that system of fruit trees and nut trees, you start really putting the part in where what month of the year does this tree bear fruit or yield nuts? And especially fruit trees is the idea of looking at them and planting in a way where you get yield throughout the year.
Absolutely. Like peaches. If you have, let's say, 4 peach trees, you don't want all 4 peaches to come due in July. You can get an early peach that comes in May, one that comes in June, one that comes in July, one that comes in August, and then you have a longer span of peaches.
Exactly. I mean, and it can go on and on. There's just so many fruit trees out there. But even the ones that you're familiar with, you can start there.
Well, and also what you're saying, familiarity. One thing I'd like people to do is research things that you're not familiar with. Like we have a tree here called a jujube. In our culture, no one knows what that is. But in the Asian cultures, the jujube is considered the most nutritious fruit on the planet. It's medicine to people, but it tastes like delicious to me. It tastes like apples, and we have the saying, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. So it's kind of interesting they taste like apples. But these jujubes can also be dried. There's one variety that dries on the tree. So you don't actually have to have a system. You don't have to have a dehydrator to do it. It just literally dries on the tree and will keep. And once it dries, it tastes like a date. So it actually has 2 different types of flavors for you. So if you're thinking you want something fresh to eat, you could eat the fresh version. And then later on, it could also be like a dessert. Kind of tastes like a little dessert.
Oh, see, and yeah. Now I'm getting hungry.
Uh-oh.
But, yeah, that's the trouble when you start talking about yummy fruit trees. But looking at that that's how you're going to survive, is with trees, things that can provide you fruit. That's, if you didn't do anything like with a vegetable garden and you just started planting trees and growing, you could grow potatoes or something like that. If you could start growing those kinds of things, you could really sustain yourself very well.
Yeah.
With those kinds of things.
And there are, so once you start moving into the vegetable arena and the tubers, there are a lot of perennial vegetables. So like as you're building these systems, like when I started with my land, I put the trees in first because I knew they'd take the longest to, you know, to get going and to provide food. And then, you know, I've started to put in the perennial vegetables like asparagus. It takes, once you plant it, it takes about 3 years to actually get a good yield of asparagus. But then going forward, it keeps giving and giving and giving for years. And there's other tubers like sunchokes or Jerusalem artichoke. It's the same plant. Once you plant it, they say it's hard to even get rid of. And it provides this abundance of food over and over again. And then you can start worrying about, okay, well, what about carrots? And carrots will last longer than something else like a tomato. You can't really store a tomato off the vine. You can dry it, but that takes, again, more energy. Whereas a carrot, you could just put it into a box of sand, and it will last throughout, you know, the storage period. And, you know, so there's different, when you think about what am I going to be planting, what should I put in first, and then put in those perennials if you can and you're interested in those, and then think about what can I store, like squashes. Some of them can store for over a year.
Well, so now we're moving into squashes. And when I think about this, it's, the question is, what do you want to do? Now, if you just want to have, like, nice vegetables and accents and zucchinis and cauliflower and broccoli and, you know, lettuce greens, and then that's one type of gardening. Now, then you have more like arboriculture where you're gardening, you know, trees. And then what we move into, if you really want to survive, like if you said, I want to survive by my own wits, I want to, and that means you're going to feed yourself. You are going to feed yourself mainly through your main crop gardens, through your starchy food. That's how every culture lives. You know, we've been so separated that we don't even think about it much anymore. But if you were going to say, I need to survive by my, like, growing my own food, It's not thinking about zucchinis and broccoli. It's thinking about sunflower seeds, corn, beans, peas, potatoes, sweet potatoes, Jerusalem artichokes, these starchy, high-calorie food sources. And you're going to have to plant so much of it. If you were to say, I'm going to sustain myself off those systems. Now, because you're growing your own food, and that means if you're going to have chickens and you say, well, I'm going to get a lot of calories from the meat or the eggs. Well, that's true. But in these permanent systems, buying the feed for the chickens is not a permanent situation. So you're still going to have to grow the food for those chickens, and that's a big deal too. So you're looking at, the real detail part of it, or the real, it's not even a detail part, it's just a life situation. If you were going to create your, create permanence.
The facts of life. The facts of life.
Yeah, basically, the facts of choosing a path that says, I'm going to grow all my own food. That means you're going to look at how many calories a day you believe you should have, or how many calories you'd want to have to reach this certain goal of, like, athletic ability, because you can look at all the athletes and see how many calories they have to consume to keep up at this certain pace, and how many calories you would have to keep up to any certain pace, and how many calories that's just out there that says you want to just live and stay alive, you must consume this many calories a day. So when you start looking at this way, it starts to change your whole perspective on what's the most important thing to grow.
Yeah, and your decision-making process.
Oh, it's it heavily affects it. It should affect the way you potentially buy a piece of land, because maybe you haven't bought a piece of land yet. And if you started to say, oh, wait, let me see. Okay, I want 3,000 calories a day. Okay, well, just 1 pound of pinto beans, 1 pound of pinto beans yields 1 pound of pinto beans would be like 700 calories. I think that's right. Well, we have to look it up again. But the point is that it would take
a lot.
No, that's it is. It's like 700 calories per pound of pinto beans. That's dry weight. That there's 365 days in a year. That's a lot of calories to figure out what you're going to grow to satisfy that. Now let's say you have a family. These are super important things if you think you're going to feed yourself. And you're going to buy some land, or you're going to go for it, or you're going to do this. You're going to die if you don't don't really think about that.
All the angles. Yeah, I mean,
that angle in particular is like hyper important, and understanding, because you could do it with water. It's pretty easy. Oh, yeah, well, a gallon of water a day will keep you alive for sure. And you go, okay, well, this much falls off my roof, and so a gallon a day, 365 gallons a year, you know, oh, baby, maybe. And you can get that easy off a roof, a small roof. You can get 365 gallons, no problem. That's to drink. Now, we're not talking about growing stuff with it. That's just for you to drink to stay alive with the water intake. But now we're talking about calories. Now we're talking about health. And just the math on that, just 3,000 calories. I mean, this is the math that's important to kind of start to consider and to really, really start concentrating on, okay, well, and then, you know, farmers will just grow conventionally, we might say, but we'll just, or you can look in Ireland. They totally survived on potatoes. They were, everything was potato, potato, potato. And the potato crops went bad. And then they died. Famine, you know. So when you look at your systems, okay, say you got, okay, I calculated all the calories. I understand I want to feed my family. Everybody gets about this many calories a day. And now I've kind of okay, now you've got that. Well, how do you provide those calories now? And in a more permanent way.
Well, and also, Joey, it's not just, okay, there's myself I have to feed. I have my wife, my children. And then it's like you have to think of other things. Do we really need the dog? Do we need the cat?
That's
a pet, you know. You have to keep going outside. Okay, well, someone said, well, if you need calories, just have a cow. Okay, well, there's a cow. We have calories now, but how are you going to feed the cow? And how many calories does the cow need?
Well, and then how much, I mean, something happens when you start eating a lot and a lot of meat. And if you don't have a lot of coffee, your pace slows down a little bit. Because they're a different kind of calories. They're not a bad kind. They're just more a slower kind.
Yeah, yeah.
Takes slower, you use them differently. So that's something to consider. Because if you're getting all your calories from meat, your body changes and you move differently.
Now, let's not paint, I don't think you're attempting to paint a bleak picture. It's not impossible to do this.
It's totally not impossible.
Yeah.
And the fun part about it is when you think about it in a permanent situation, because you're going to, because the goal is here, you're going to design it and you're going to know. And that's part of permaculture. And, you know, using it as a design scientist, we're going to start thinking about all these things. And we're not going to be fearful and not going to be scared, because we're thinking about them and we're going to solve them, because they're totally solvable, because humans have been living for so long figuring this stuff out. And they have figured it out before. We've kind of lost that part in some of us, you know, how that all works. But we can learn it again and apply this science to it, this to really come up with some good strategies. And what I'm, and the fun part of it for me is to think about, okay, well, I'm not going to just grow all potatoes. What about potatoes? What about corn? And mixing it all together in a polyculture and growing melons with your corn. And then, like, you have, I mean, Paul talks about the sweet three sisters a lot.
Yeah,
right, Paul?
I was just going to mention it. Because, like, the Native Americans, you know, like, out here we can grow a lot in California because of our climate. But when you live in a snow area and, you know, you've got limited growing periods and you can grow something like beans, which grow quickly, you have to think about that too. So there's time element, weather elements, and for the Native Americans, that was a very quick way to grow things, and it was a complementary system in a polyculture. I mean, it was only three types of things, but it was not monoculture.
And right.
Yeah.
And when you start doing stuff like that, you have a bad potato year. Well, it might have been a great sunflower seed year, or it might have been a great melon year.
Yeah.
It's and so you plan for those things. You know, you don't put all your eggs in one basket. You end up like the Irish did.
And also, all three of those things you can store long term. So the corn, and there's multiple uses for it. So corn can be eaten fresh. It can be stored. It can be turned into cornmeal, and, you know, all different types of food. The beans can be eaten fresh. They can be eaten, you know, stored very long term. Beans last very long term. And again, the squashes can totally be stored long term depending upon the variety. And then the seeds within the squash can be, they're very high in fat and are also a source of food.
So it's like,
yeah,
those are great things to start wrapping our brains around. And if we are looking for that way of living where we're going to grow, you know, to survive from what we grow, you know, because it can get intense when you just think about vegetable gardens. Oh, gosh, well, I'm going to plant these, and I'm going to plant those, and I'm going to plant those, and that's fine. And that's a great thing to do. But there's a whole other place to really focus first if you're looking at surviving. And that's these high calorie, you know, high energy crops or tree crops that you would get. And if you can just put those two together, the tree systems, the nut trees and the fruit trees, and your main crop, starchy food, high calorie growing, you know, your veggie, that kind of growing, you're going to have like an amazing, like, that is going to be durable, it's going to be sustainable, and you're going to start really feeling good about what you're doing. Just planning it out feels good because you're realizing what it means to keep your body alive. Like and we're not talking about buying things from the store, you know, going to the market. We're really realizing what it really takes to, you know, grow all this. And for some people that grew up on a farm, it may not be a big deal at all if they really did, you know, grow everything they were going to eat. But for me, growing up in suburbia.
Well, yeah, Joey and I are city boys. We grew up nowhere near food that grows in the ground. The food that we know came from a grocery store, right?
Right. I mean, that's the truth. And even my children, you know, we talk about this and we start, you know, we grow a lot of food, but we don't grow like, we're not totally not supporting ourselves through these big systems like that where you have, you're growing a large quantity of your staple crops. We're 2 years into this project here, and that is my major goal for this third year. We just had our second year anniversary here, and now we're having this third year is going to be really focused on this design. Now, we put a lot of fruit trees in. We've been really thinking about this. Paul's been really helping a lot because he's really good at understanding and studying and looking at the different fruit trees to give us yields throughout the year. And he's really put together some great different varieties to put us into that place of permanence with our fruit tree systems. And I'm very excited, actually. We're going to be expanding that into, we've done a lot of apples and pears and nectarines and apriums and plumquats and plums and all, and different things like that. But now we're going to start moving in, in 10 months, we're going to be getting these mangoes that are, aren't we, Paul?
Well, we are. I don't know why you're excited, because Joey can't even eat mangoes, but his whole family can, and I can. We're really excited. If you're excited, we're really excited.
That's right.
Because these mangoes have been bred, you know, selected from generations of mangoes grown in Southern California, and they're now, you know, at a point where the growers feel that they're ready for, you know, a lot of people test over years to find varieties that work well where we live. And you need to do the same for where you live. So mangoes come from tropical areas. Well, we don't live in a tropical area. So these new varieties have been announced, and we're going to put an order in and get some of these on the land because they're delicious. Why not? And a mature tree yields lots and lots and lots of food.
Just thinking about it, it gets me. When you think about a tree, it lives your lifetime, and a lot of trees way more than your lifetime. Talk about permanent food production that keeps getting sturdier and more durable and more permanent as it sets more roots down and the soil becomes more conditioned and more fruitful through putting in your cyclic cycles, the cycles that keep where you take waste, you know, your kitchen waste, and you put it in a compost system and you close these loops. It like doesn't go off your property, different stuff doesn't go off anymore. It stays there and you keep returning it to the earth around those fruit trees. And oh my gosh,
An example is, I mean, for most of you listening, you probably live near trees, but where we live in Southern California, most people don't even realize what a forest is. They're, trees are put in the ground as a design. You know, they're not. We don't have forests where we live, because what they do is they come in with bulldozers and they create these artificial communities. They completely ruin the natural landscape, and then they come in and they put in these fake landscapes, which they call, you know, I mean, it's just like we don't have any concept of people like they do in Oregon or Maine, and where you have nature around you. But where we live now, right in back of my trailer that I live, we have basically a forest. It's very small, but it's along the stream, and I'm looking out my window right now. We don't fertilize it. We don't water it. We don't do anything to it. But it is 100% green. It is thriving.
Oh, that's – and then now see – getting me more riled up and excited because Exactly what Paul's talking about, those stream system that's around the property, something if you're going to buy property one day, something to think about. There's a lot of just aspects in that. I recommend getting your permaculture design certificate. It's called a PDC. It really starts helping you think about the attributes of land, of a property that you would buy, and if you can get some kind of running water on it or seasonal creek within the property, it's the one of the greatest things that you can have, because you can put like Paul said, it's growing right behind him. You know, and
it's truly a forest. You cannot walk through it because it's so dense. But when we look in the permaculture eyes, we're like, this is awesome, because we're not doing anything and it's thriving, but we can imitate it and we can take those patterns and duplicate it in an organized and designed way and say, okay, how do we do that over here with fruit trees and trees that are actually going to produce? So, like, literally right in back of me is this system. Who knows how it got started? It's here, but it's old. You know, it's a forest. And right in back of my trailer is a walnut tree. It's just peeking through, and I can look right there, and there's a walnut. And if we just wanted, we could open up some light and let that walnut tree come out, and it would absolutely produce a lot more nuts if we recognize what's in there. And then when we, in our fruit tree forest, in the food forest that we're creating, we could just look over to where I'm living and say, wow, that's what this is going to be like, but with tons more food.
And then on top of that, if you, as you get more time and you're starting to learn more, you can go into those, that little creek forest system area, and start to add trees to it and diversify it even more. And oh my gosh, now you're just putting the trees in.
You think you're excited. I'm getting more excited. I can't hold back here, because you know what? We talk about the edge in permaculture. So on the edge of this forest, the berries right outside my door, I've got blackberries, and all I have to do is just make a little bit more room for them and make a choice. Do I want berries, or do I want this other thing that doesn't really do much? You know, the forest wants to give abundance, and it has abundance.
Oh.
I mean, right, Joey?
Oh, gosh. Okay, so check this out today.
This is a good topic.
Yeah, no, it's super good, because permanence is so important. And when we're thinking about it, especially permaculture, because it's like permanent agriculture, it's like permanence. So on a site, considering all your calories it's going to take for you to live, well, today we harvested a melon out of the garden, and we cut it up, and everybody had some melon. And as I was slicing it up, because I've slaughtered some animals, and you know, we take them apart, and we process the meat and take the organs out and do some different things. Well, the animal didn't want to die. It didn't want me to kill it. But I was hungry, and so I ate it. And it was eating our garden too. So that's another story for another day. But today I got the melon out, and a melon has a lot of calories in it. And those calories, like we were talking about, that's what keeps you alive. Especially yummy, sugary ones like the melon. So I'm slicing the melon open, and I kind of get these flashbacks, or not flashbacks, but like remembrances or familiarities of, you know, I'm slicing the melon open into these, you know, slices, and I'm cutting into the meat and into the center, into the, you know, the heart of it where all the seeds are and everything. And I cut it open, and I'm slicing it up. And it's so sweet and so nutritious and so calorific, so many calories. And I realize, I go, oh my gosh, the big difference between the squirrel, the chicken, the cow, and the melon is the melon wants you to eat it. And this is just fun for me in the permanent setting idea of things, is all the fruit trees, they want you to eat their fruit.
The more you pick, the more you get.
Well, the more you pick, and then because they want you to get those seeds in you and then go poop them out somewhere and spread them all around. That's the goal of plants, is to spread their seed. So any way they can design them, you know, keep evolving themselves to be sweeter or yummier to either humans or birds or something that can transport their seeds, the more permanent their existence is. And that relationship is something to consider, because as you keep moving through the different levels and thinking about permanence, some things and make a real connection with you. And that sweetness of that melon and the amount of energy it gives me and the kind of energy it gives me has made a real connection in me. And that plant is going to live on. We've saved the seeds and will live on permanently in our garden, in our main crop area, and I'm going to grow a lot of them.
Right, because it was so sweet. And
it was so sweet and yummy, and it wants me to eat it. And so those are part of the designs too. And then we move into a whole nother level, which is it, because there's always the levels, and they're beautiful and intricate, and you have the whole other part where now you look out. Say you've put these systems in and you understood the calories and they're growing. Even me, just that melon experience and having a lot of food started here and these tree systems started, I can't, when you, as it matures and being surrounded by what you need to live, like what you need to keep your body alive, you're surrounded by it and you understand it and you've communicated with it in a sense of tasting it and enjoying it and then propagating it and becoming part of that circle. That is like an amazing sense of security and positive feelings that you will totally want to share with everybody you know, because you have this security now to sustain your own life through this complete understanding of that function where the thing grows, you eat it, and it keeps you alive. And you understand which plants, which trees do that and how they do it.
And the abundance is absolutely there. So, but it's different for everyone. So like one tree that might grow awesome here might not grow the same in Maine. But an example is there's a tree that was at my house, and it was time to pick all the fruit. And so we picked it, and we brought it over to where I'm living now. And there's a lot of people living here. We have a lot of visitors that come through. And there was, and there still is, plenty for everyone. Now, we could have gone and processed it, dried them out, and made, you know, dried plums, like a prune. We didn't do that because people were enjoying them fresh. But the abundance, if you make these decisions properly, where you spread out the harvest times in the different periods that the fruit becomes ripe, there will be plenty for you and plenty for your neighbors, and they're going to choose to grow a different variety. So you can, you know, share that. That's the third permaculture ethic, which is the return of the surplus and doing your fair share or using your fair share. But anyway, it's very exciting.
And it starts to apply. It starts to work in a lot of other avenues, where you start thinking about the other things you're doing. Like, okay, I'll give you an example. Like, so we're making compost today. We have a woofer here, Matthew, and him and I have been working together a lot and talking about a lot of different strategies and ways to do things. And we were making compost, and we're making lots of compost. So we're in this compost making mood. And what we were talking about today, we made one compost pile, and then we made another compost pile, because my job is an arborist, so I take care of trees. So I'll end up with a lot of mulch, and that's when you get the tree trimmings after you've taken care of the tree and you've pruned it, you put the branches through a machine called a chipper, and it chips it all up into these little bits and pieces, and that's the mulch. And so when I come home from work, I'll dump this pile of mulch on the ground. It's all, you know, little bits and pieces of leaves and little branches and stuff. And then there's a horse that lives here on the property that's one of our tenants. It's her horse. And so we go get its poop, and we start making compost. Well, today we were making a compost pile to power a shower to make hot water. So we were putting it in there and putting the tubing in inside the compost, because the compost is going to heat up real hot, and it's going to heat the water that's in this 400 feet of tubing and within the compost pile. Well, we're like thinking of a strategy. How could you make this, let's say, more permanent? What we could add to this compost making process to use more of the energy that's going on here. And we've been talking a lot about bananas, Matthew and I have. And today we realize if you built a composting like bin system, and these are big bins I'm talking about, our bin are like, they're big. They're big.
I'm kind of surprised you put them where you did.
I put them so I could pay attention to them.
Yeah.
And they would.
The zone one. Or, yeah, this is zone
one. It's right on the edge of zone one and zone two. But yeah. And it's somewhere where I wanted to have it close to the garden, so when it's made, you know, it just gets more attention and you want to be more a part of it. But now we've added another element where we came up with a strategy where we could put the bins in a certain order, and in the middle we could have – you kind of slant the dirt a bit so everything drains towards this middle point, and the compost bins are in a circle around this center point, and in the center – are tons of banana trees. So when you're watering the compost and making it, everything drains into the center because bananas love water. And all the yummy juices that come out of the compost pile go to the bananas. Well, and then you put the shower near that area, and then the shower drains into the bananas. So there's another water source. And now you get your water throughout the year. And here's the most important part, because it gets cold here where we live. It can get into the 20s. And bananas don't really enjoy that very much. Well, imagine this. The bananas are in the center. All that water and yummy juice keeps flowing to them, so they never are lacking water. The shower water is going to them.
Well, and the nutrients.
All the nutrients.
Yeah.
And there's the key factor.
The heat.
All the heat generated by these giant composting systems. Now you're heating water. Now you're creating this whole environment for bananas to thrive.
Because they love the heat.
They'll love how warm it is there, and it'll be humid there because there's so much heat and moisture there. And this is our big vision now. So there's so many layers and so many people that are way smarter than me and thinking about this stuff can keep coming up with all these ways to put plants together and put elements together to increase yields or increase energy use, like taking energy and applying it in a different way so it becomes – you can use energy in more than one way, energy produced. That can apply to these main crop systems. Somebody can put together all sorts of great little connections together, and it's infinite. Everybody can do something, and it would be totally unique because there's infinite amount of variety of like options and connections that can be made. Everybody can be special. Everybody can put their touch on something because it's just there's always another level to go to, or something to stick in, or something that you enjoy. And that I think, and the beauty of saying something's permanent and it's durable, but it's completely like virtually infinite in its design, or I mean in its evolution, I mean I like that.
Well, especially like bananas. Bananas, you can't get rid of them. I mean, my neighbor at my old house, every year they had these huge bananas. They were like a plantain variety, and they survived in our area. And the wife would come out, and she'd say, I need those things out of here, because they grew up right against the house. And her husband literally was a landscaper. He knows about trees. He knows about plants. And every year he'd go out there and try to get rid of the bananas. Every single year they would come back bigger than ever. And so, you know, truly here where we have more frost, you know, if this system does take, and I'm sure it would because it's a great theory. And, you know, there are people out there who have these mulch pits or the compost pits in a banana circle. So that's not a new concept, but they might be doing it for a different reason. Like for us, it's to the frost.
Right.
To generate heat, and it's to stack these different functions. So Joey's like, well, let's create a shower. All right, let's have a shower. Well, what else can we use this for in addition to a shower? Oh, we can have food from it. Bananas. We get the nutrients from the compost. We get the water from the shower. And the whole, it's, he's created a system here that's going to continue on and on and on and on. And I think it's going to work.
Yeah. Well, you even can duck down under one of the tarps near one of the compost piles and get a little sauna going.
Right.
We were doing that today. We kind of ducked under the tarp real quick and just kind of – we sweated a little bit. We got a little sauna steam thing going, you know. So there's another fun thing to do.
Peggy wants her hot tub, so somehow you're going to have to figure that into the whole thing.
Well, yeah. Well,
she doesn't need the bubbles. So the hot soak, you know.
Well, I think that's a job for the – So we were talking about that today too, because we're going to build a rocket mass sauna.
Oh right. Oh okay.
Right.
Rocket
so
mass
that
sauna. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I want to really utilize the fuel efficiently, mm-hmm. and start to develop some different rocket mass systems where we have radiant heaters in the house, and then we have the rocket mass sauna type of situation. And we're going to make a rocket mass heater to supply hot water for our house. So, I don't see why you couldn't do it for the sauna. It just depends on, I mean, it'd be easier if there was like a one person sauna, cause that's a lot of fuel. I mean, kind of to heat all her water, but, we'll see what we can do. She might have to wait for that for a while. It's like really low on the priority list, but hopefully she's not listening. So,
we like to give her a hard time because she wants it. She wants it. She wants it. And it's like, well, okay, great.
For sure. All right.
We want it too, but not now.
Right.
There's other priorities.
Oh, and then, I mean, and then the, of course we understand, but it's something to remember. The compost systems make compost. You're making compost, making bananas, making warm showers. I mean, and making fertilizer. It's just like, because there's so many different kinds of compost you can make. You know, you can make a compost that you're just going to plant in, or you can make a compost that's actually really, you know, got a lot of different bacteria in it and protozoa and different fungi and something. So maybe you're going to make a probiotic out of that compost. So you could have different kinds of compost in those different bins, wire mesh bin systems that we do, we're gonna do it. I'll probably do it really soon because winter's coming, and I'd like to test it out and see how it goes. It really hinges on making compost, and it's kind of an encouragement because sometimes, you know, life for all of us gets going, and it's the same with these main crop systems and looking at the calories. And all I'm really want people to think about or to do, myself included, is to start really calculating those calories. Even if we're not going to plant the systems, you know, or ever going to plant the systems. I mean, understanding it is super important. And maybe understanding it and start thinking about it actually would encourage you to get to that point of doing it. You know, just that understanding of it. And, you know, and like I was saying, putting the bananas, if we put the bananas in with the compost, it's even more of an encouragement to go out and keep doing that compost. Sometimes everything gets a little wild and a lot of things are going on, kids going to soccer and all the stuff we've got going on and our business to run and all these different things going on. But you, and any way to encourage yourself, like I'm super encouraged to eat melons because of that one, or to grow them. But also the compost, you know, keep making the compost, because that's how you're going to get that permanent fertility also, is through learning how to make compost.
Well, the other thing we've expanded is the worm production.
Oh, right.
Which is also permanent. As long as you feed them, they will grow as large as the amount of food you give them.
That's right.
And they're great. I mean, you will never need fertilizer again if you start a worm colony, because they will eat and keep multiplying, and that fertilizer will not burn. You know, it's one of the best out there, if not the best. But anyway.
Well, and then like Paul just said, I mean, we got Paul today, we have a little worm bin that we were using, little like size worm bin, because Paul's setting up a little demonstration garden at his house here with his trailer, where he's got a lot of pots or 24-inch like wooden boxes that trees come in. He's got those set up, some little raised bed planter systems, and then he's going to take the smaller worm stackable plastic worm bin system that we were using and take it over to his house. And then cuz another family lives here, they have a larger worm bin system by their house for their food scraps. And then we have one bathtub that I salvaged from somebody's house, old cast iron bathtub with a whole worm bin system going. And then we just set up another bathtub that we got from the same house to put a whole nother worm system in going. Because, oh, geez, the juice. If you're not even talking about the castings, you're the worm juice that comes when you water the worms to make sure that the right moisture so they don't dry out, that comes out the drain, oh, that... your garden or your plants love that. You spray it on them, you water them. These are the permanence. Permanence comes through, you know, taking all those energies that are there and not letting them get off your sight. It has to do with water, the sun, trying to get the most out of the sun as it passes through the sky over your property, over your land, or over your condo, over your apartment, choosing the right apartment where the sun's going to pass enough maybe to get some sun in through the windows in the winter. These types of things, you're looking at that and trying to, okay, as much energy as we could get out of this compost system, as much energy as we can get out of, I mean, driving. You like try to put a couple errands together in one driving, you know, in one drive to, you know, maximize that energy. The same thing applies here, and that's permanence. Understanding that and practicing thinking about how you're going to keep utilizing the different energies. And calories is an energy. And it's one that's overlooked. Calories are energy. And it's how we're going to grow that energy to keep our bodies going, which run on energy. So you put it in its place and you start to develop those inner interactions and relations and connections. So, I mean, yeah, that was related to encouraging yourself to keep, you know, keep going for it and getting yourself out there and keep practicing. And
yeah. And some of you might just have us to listen to, or, you know, like you might not be near a permaculture site or whatever, but, you know, there's so much information on the web, and, You know, if you're ever in Southern California, we invite you to come to Tipuana Farm and see what we're doing. There's going to be a conference in next March. It's called the Permaculture Voices Conference. And if you go to permaculturevoices.com, absolutely the best leaders on the planet for permaculture is an incredible panel of people who are coming to you know, give their opinions and teach us about, you know, the things that they're doing and give us strategies to help make a difference. And this weekend, Permaculture Voices is going to have what's called a shout out. And so if you go to permaculturevoices.com/shout, they're going to have a 5-hour webinar. So you can, like, you're listening to us, you can listen this weekend. It costs $3, but for 5 hours. And you're going to hear three of some of the keynote speakers that will be at the conference next March. So that's Larry Santoyo, Paul Wheaton, who's been on my show many times, and Ben Falk. So I highly recommend, if you can, it's going to be on August 10th, which is Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific. And again, if you go to permaculturevoices.com/shout, you can get more details on how to register. The other thing is, like, you have the luxury of listening to us, but if I could ask, please subscribe to our channel here at the Blog Talk Radio. Also, if you could promote the episodes, you can go to Facebook, Twitter. You can actually embed the episodes on your blogs and websites. That would help to get the word out as well for the work that Joey and I are doing, the other guests that I have. Because, you know, we've got a lot of great feedback and we want to grow. It's just, we need help. So that would be great. Joey's has several websites. And one is foodtreeforest.com. And, you know, Joey works so hard and he's hands-on. Websites take a second place for him. And we're trying to balance and figure out, you know, how can we get more information out there to everyone. Right now, this Blog Talk Radio has been our primary, I mean, lately it's been our primary talking, which I think is very important. But, you know, we're going to try to get more videos out and all that. But so foodtreeforest.com. Another one's called Dirty Permies, DirtyPermies.com, Dirty Permies. And he's got a YouTube channel. What's that channel, Joey?
That's just Dirty Permie.
Dirty Permie, I-E.
Right. No, that's what we got to get on the websites. Get it all linked up, yeah. Get it all proper so it's all kind of like our farm is.
And it's kind of my job. I mean, no one's actually assigned me that task.
That's right.
It's all in my servers. I'm an administrator on all of them. And, you know, at some point we're going to get there. But if you could help us by spreading the word for not only this episode but the other websites, that'd be great. And you're always welcome to come to Tipuana Farm here in San Marcos, California. Never a dull moment, that's for sure.
That's right.
And we have farm tours once a month, and we do a lot of promotion through meetup.com, through the San Diego Permaculture Group, and also there's a San Diego Homesteaders Group that we promote a lot of our things. Joey's also founded, he and his wife, a nonprofit organization called Evoke Hope. And it's really important for us to let you know that that's what this is all about. We want to bring a sense of hope and let you know that you can make a difference. And we're not doing this just to talk. We're doing it because we want to help you to have hope and to know that you can make a difference too. Together, I say when one person's weak, we're all weak. And but when one person's strong, we can all be strong. So let's be strong together. So evokehope.com is another website. Really want to promote. Please sign up for our mailing list. And, you know, it's a nonprofit organization, and we're just really excited about all the things we're doing. I don't know how, I mean, Joey, you're incredible. Where do you get all this energy? It must be all those melons.
I'm trying. If I can get some more melons growing, who knows what will happen.
Well, I personally planted, I don't know how many varieties, but many, many varieties. And it's a little late in the season, but we have a much longer growing season than other parts of the country. So, you know, we'll see what comes out of it.
Yeah, it's worth a try.
Yeah. All right, Joey, any last words here?
Permanence and love.
And
I think there is something there. They do link up the two together. So I that's what I wanted to. That's what I'm looking forward to setting up.
I totally agree. Permanence and love, joy, happiness, and peace. Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Joey, we'll see you when I see you, which is probably, what, about a minute?
That's right.
What's funny is we're here on the land, and we're on the same show, but we're not sitting together. I'm in my trailer. He's over at his house.
I get pretty distracted when I'm sitting with him because
Joey has ADD, and if he sees my computer with the... Oh, I'm not saying you have ADD, but
he loves to look at
the computer. And
he's got a big Mac screen, one of those like giant screens, and it has all these like shortcut things on it.
Because I have a studio here on the computer for the show, and he's like, "What's that button?" It's like, Joey, just talk about permaculture.
yeah, I get it. Whoa.
Anyway, thank you, Joey.
Thank you, Paul.
See you next week.
Okay, bye. Bye, everybody.
Bye.